All right, so tonight we're going to be talking about wisdom and our speech, and I don't have any stats or any data to back this up, but it may be the most heavily covered topic in Proverbs. If it's not, it's right up there. There's so many passages that deal with the tongue, the way we speak, our speech. In the book of Proverbs, we certainly won't be able to cover all of them today. We do have a lot of passages. I think they're all on the screen just because we have so many, and just for time's sake, they're all be on the screen, but we certainly won't be able to cover all of them today. The way we'll go through this is we'll talk about first the importance of the tongue. We'll talk about some misuses of the tongue and wise uses of the tongue. And then we'll talk about, maybe an apparent contradiction or something we need to balance. I'm going to call that to speak or not to speak. We'll talk about that here later, and then test of proper speech. So time permitting, that's what we'll get through in the class today. So if I were to tell you guys, or to say that, what we're talking about today is a matter of life and death, would you think that I was being over the top if I described it as such? Solomon says in chapter 18, where he says that death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. So he's saying that what we're talking about today is a matter of life and death, in a sense. Now, we think about that, and certainly there are, there's relationship with God and spiritual life and death, and there are lessons there. But I think Solomon has in mind a more figurative sense when he says that. And we'll look at a few passages here in a minute that show that through by the power of the tongue, it really determines our quality of life. We can have a really good life, free from trouble, or we can have a really, poor time in this life, based on the way that we speak. And not only, our own quality of life, but, the things that we say, we can do a lot of harm to other people through the things that we say. But on the flip side, we can also do so much good with the things we say as well. So there's this huge spectrum of outcomes, based on the things that we say. So in that sense, it's life and death, again, in probably a more figurative sense, that rests with the power of the tongue. I want to show you just a few verses here on the screen to just illustrate just how important the tongue is in this book. Chapter 12, verse 13 says, "An evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous escapes from trouble." You see how the quality of life is kind of determined, through what, through what is said. Either he's ensnared by the things that he says, or escapes from trouble. Chapter 18, verses 6 and 7, "A fool's lips walk into a fight, and his mouth invites a beating. A fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are a snare to his soul." Right, so it's like the fool is like walking into a room, and he's picking out just the biggest, toughest guy he can find, and mouthing off to him, really just asking for it, right? With the things that he says, he walks right into his own ruin and becomes a snare to his soul. And then chapter 21 and verse 23. "Whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps himself out of trouble." So you can see that the way we speak is going to have a direct impact on really, like I said, our quality of life. It can get us into trouble and also keep us out of trouble. Let's look at this one here just by itself in chapter 13 and verse 2, where Solomon says, "From the fruit of his mouth a man eats what is good, but the desire of the treacherous is for violence." So by the things that we say and the results of the things we say, we can actually enjoy what is good. I think what is truly good, whether that's you know, peace and harmony and friendships, you know, the contrast with the violence that he mentions here for the treacherous, the things that are truly good can be enjoyed, you know, by the things that we say, and if we can control our tongues. But what about the impact on others? Well, here in chapter 10, verse 20, he says, "The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth." So the heart of the wicked, you know, the things that the wicked says doesn't do a whole lot of good. In fact, it actually does a lot of harm. That's not the emphasis here, though, in this passage. The emphasis here is the value of the things that the righteous say. It's you know, the finest silver there is. That's how valuable it can be. And here in chapter 11, verse 11, "By the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted." So, you know, by the impact of the things the upright has to say, an entire city is exalted to a higher place. And then the contrast with the wicked, by the mouth of the wicked, the city is overthrown. So there's a tremendous amount of impact that we can have for good or for bad by the things that we say. And, you know, and I don't say these things just to, you know, to instruct you guys for the first time that, you know, good speech is good and bad speech is bad. You know, you guys, you know those things. But I think the wisdom here is that we ought not underestimate the harm that we can cause by the things that we say and the harm we can do to ourselves. And we really ought not to underestimate or underappreciate the good that our lives can have if we speak with wisdom and speak righteously, and the good we can do for others through the things that we say. So that's really, you know, what I want to emphasize through looking at all of these different proverbs. One final reason that the tongue is important in the book of Proverbs is that Proverbs teaches that the tongue, the way we speak, is really a direct indication of our heart, right? So here in chapter 16 and verse 23, where he says, "The heart of the wise makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips." So it starts at his heart, and that's why his speech is what it is. And we talked about that, I think, a few lessons ago when we talked about the heart of the wise and the foolish, that it's that principle of, you know, what's in here is going to come out. Jesus talked about that too, that, you know, what's in here is going to come out. And so that there's a direct link between our heart and our tongues, very, very direct link, that what's in here is going to come out in the things that we say. You know, Proverbs even uses, it's almost like it uses tongue and heart like synonymously in some places. Like a couple of examples here, like in 10:20 that we already looked at, he says, "The tongue of the righteous is choice silver." And instead of saying, "But the tongue of the wicked is of little worth," instead of saying that, he says, "The heart of the wicked is of little worth." So it's almost like he's just, again, synonymously, you know, using heart instead of tongue. Same way here in chapter 15, verse 7. So I think that shows, if anything, that there is this close connection between our heart and the things that we say. All right, before I move on to some specific misuses of the tongue, any other thoughts you guys wanted to share?
Jake.
Yeah, Paula, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do. You know, it's really startling when Jesus says in Matthew 12:36. Can you hear me?
I'm having some issues. Give me 1 second to figure out my audio.
Paula, we can hear you.
But Jake can't?
But Jake can't, it appears.
Oh, I see. Okay.
What you're saying is good. Keep it
up.
Do
you want me to just chat it? Just type it?
I don't know, Paul. Maybe that's a good idea. Or you can just...
Okay. All right. Well, I'll read it and somebody can just type it. It's Matthew 12:36-37. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. So could somebody just type that, Matthew 12:36-37?
I just typed it to him, Paula.
I hear you now, Paula. I hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me? All right.
I can't.
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Yeah, Matthew 12:36-37, people will give account for every word. Absolutely right. So, I mean, even Jesus stresses the just how crucial it is. Even the careless words, I think it says there that we utter, right? All of those will be, and we'll have to give an account for those. So it's, you know, all throughout the scriptures, the things that we say just are of, you know, it's crucial that we're able to control those things and speak with wisdom and righteousness. So it's a great, great reference. Did I miss anybody else, Paul, during my issues? All right, let's talk about some specific misuses of the tongue that Proverbs mentions. It starts with, of course, lying or deception. You know, so much is said about lying and deceitful practices in the book, and we definitely don't have time to even look at half of them. But, you know, the wise are people that love the truth. That means a lot of things, but above all, it means that we're not going to, you know, present something as the truth when we know it not to be. Here in chapter 21, verse 6, the getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a snare of death. So what we see here is we see one possible motivation. Someone may lie. You know, there's certainly some greed, maybe one motivation. But even if it is, you know, how long does that last? Well, it doesn't last very long at all, right? It's a fleeting vapor and a snare of death. Here in 12:19, truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. You know, to someone who is lying, doesn't the truth just keep changing on them? You know, like, so if I'm going to lie based on whatever the circumstance is or what I need out of the situation, then, you know, I'm going to tell one person one thing. I go over here and I'm going to tell somebody else something else. And I'm constantly going to have to be telling different stories to different people in order to get what I want. Not to mention, you know, having to tell lies to cover up and perpetuate lies I've already told. But, you know, contrast that with telling the truth. You know, the truth is the truth is the truth, and it all is always the truth, right? So the truth, again, endures forever, but a lying tongue is only going to be but for a moment, and then we're telling another lie because we're covering that lie, or we're moving on to something else because it fits what we need. And then finally, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will not escape. There in chapter 19, verse 5. There's a lot of, I guess, courtroom-type language in the book of Proverbs about speaking in court and about witnesses. And certainly, you know, there's obviously some direct application to if I'm a witness in a courtroom that, you know, I need to speak the truth in that situation. That doesn't come up often for me personally, and I'm sure for you guys as well, where you're in a courtroom type setting. So it made me wonder kind of like, are there some other maybe principles we can take out of this idea of you know, false witnesses versus true witnesses? So just thinking about it, like, what are some possible ways that a witness may be influenced to tell something other than the truth? Like what are some of the pressures that may be on a witness in a court case? sensitive any, I think about like bias, you know, like there's bias, there's things like bribery. It's actually in the Proverbs talks about like revenge may be a factor. Witness may get up there and he wants to just get back at the, I guess the defendant on trial. And so he lies about what happened in order to get back at him. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
It could be your relative.
Yeah.
A member that you're trying to protect.
Right. Yeah. You may be conflict of interest and there's some bias there. Because of just kind of the gravity of that, or the importance of that role and you're there and someone's life may be in your hands, right? Their punishment may be in your hands. There's so many like pressures and forces that may be on someone to tell something other than the truth. You know, whether that's, you know, bias or conflict of interest or revenge or whatever. But the lesson here is that no matter, you know, what forces may be upon us, even in that situation, that it's important that we tell the truth, even if those things are going on around us. They may take different forms from us being on the stand, but no matter what those influences are, it's crucial that we be people who tell the truth in whatever situation.
Sometimes there may be strong public opinion in favor of the person or opposed to the person who's on trial, and we have to tell the truth even if it goes contrary to public opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's another big pressure that maybe we may feel in that situation. Yeah, just the public sentiment, and there's certainly lessons there that we need to tell the truth no matter what. All right, I'm going to move on to another one, slander. You know, where we attack the character or reputation of someone falsely. You know, Solomon says here in chapter 11 that with his mouth, the godless man would destroy his neighbor, but by knowledge, the righteous are delivered. So by the things that we say, can we do damage to someone else? I mean, absolutely we can. Like we can destroy them in a way, right? Destroy their reputation, destroy everything that they're about. If we go around saying things, attacking their character, things that aren't true, attacking their character, and who they are. I'm going to go ahead and move quickly on to some others. Gossip as well. Probably not too much needs to be said about gossip and how that's a misuse of the tongue. Here in chapter 11, verse 13, whoever goes about slandering, reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a thing covered. So instead of being trustworthy, someone who wants to go around, loves to get secrets from people and then loves to take those secrets and go out and reveal them, to other people. I think there's a word that's used often in the book, at least in the ESV for the person who likes to gossip, and that's the whisperer. The ESV uses that quite a bit. Here in 16:28, it says, "A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends." So I don't think we have to think too hard about where that word whisperer came from. You know, oftentimes, you know, gossip doesn't take the form of you know, I'm out there just shouting the things I know to everyone around, but it's, you know, going maybe to individuals, you know, discreetly and, you know, "Hey, did you hear about so-and-so?" Or, you know, "You'll never guess what I heard about this person," and doing it in secret. But just because it's done in secret, it doesn't minimize the damage that is done. It says here it can separate even close friends. Do you guys remember, I think it was in chapter 6, where I had that list of, I think it was 7 things that were an abomination to the Lord. That may have been in the lesson sheet, I believe. But did you go back and look? How many of those 7 have to do with the things that we say? Chapter 6, 16 through 19, if you want to look over there real quick. Look over there real quick and see if you can tell out of the seven, how many have to do with the tongue.
At least three, Jake, maybe four, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, I saw three. Yeah, you're probably some interpretation on there, but it's at least three, right? Three out of seven things that would be an abomination to the Lord have to do with the things we say. Like lying tongue, of course. False witness is there again. So again, lying and deception. And then the last one there, one who sows discord among brothers. Right. So certainly that's going to be, done primarily through the things that we say. And so, this idea of gossip and being a whisperer, remember that sowing discord among brothers is right there on this list of things that God says is an abomination to him. Let me continue here. Let's see. Flattery as well. So, we say good things about someone, not because we want to encourage them or lift them up, out of selfless motives, but the motive is actually selfish, where we're trying to get some out of it, and usually it's going to wind up being to the harm of the person that we are actually supposedly lifting up and buttering up. Here in 29 verse 5, it says, a man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. So when we're loading all this praise, heaping this praise on someone, really for our own selfish reasons, because we want to get something out of it, we're really just setting a trap for that person. We in chapter 6 and 7 we talked about the flattery of the adulterous woman, the way she would speak to the young man, and of course it talks about the downfall he would suffer as a result of that. And and I was thinking about this and we all know flattery is something that is spoken against here in the book, but is it maybe something we get closer to than we realize, more than we think, perhaps, where we under the guise of encouragement of others, that we really look, we have something in mind for ourselves the whole time? So perhaps that's something we need to consider and self-examine. Lastly, in terms of the misuses, I'll just put babbling. chapter 10, verse 19 says, when words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. So the proverb said it's foolish to just speak too much, because the more we say, the more likely it is that we're going to say something that's inappropriate, or it's insensitive, or it's deceiving. And really, the more we speak, just the less valuable or impactful our words are going to be, period. The more words that we put out there. So I think it's chapter 17 has that passage about the fool. Even a fool who is silent is considered wise. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but the silence of the fool is the closest he'll ever get to being wise, just by being quiet. And there's certainly, we can learn from that babbling is certainly a foolish way to use our tongues. Yeah, James, did you have a comment, question?
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
I think one of the reasons in regards to someone that does a lot of talking, mm-hmm. that means they're not listening.
Yeah.
And some of the proverbs we're going to look at kind of mentions that. So they're not able to receive instruction, any wisdom or anything else, because they're too busy talking and they're not listening.
Yeah. Yes, that's a great point. Yeah. Here a little later, I want to talk about some principles of wise speech, and one of them is, that we're just prone to listen first before speaking, right? Kind of the quick to hear and slow to speak, as James would put it in the New Testament. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts, comments on misuses of the tongue?
Yeah, Jake, if I can, let me build on your point about slander. I think it actually goes even, could be simpler than slander. So you reference a verse there, chapter 11, verse 9, where it talks about the man who's destroying his neighbor with his mouth. Also in the lesson sheet was chapter 14, verse 3, where it talks about the mouth of a fool is a rod of pride. The lips of the wise will preserve them. So again, we see the mouth being used as an offensive weapon to basically just beat people down and tear them down. Maybe you're not specifically spreading slander or gossip around them, but you're using your mouth as a rod and an offensive weapon. It's compared to what it says here as the counter to that, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. And I think about Jesus so many times where he was dealing with the scribes and the Pharisees and they were challenging him. They were talking to him about things from whether you should pay taxes or not, or what's the greatest commandment, or trying to trip him up in his words around what marriage is and what marriage isn't. And Jesus was always certainly righteous and wise in his words back to those people. He didn't beat them down. He had the right answers to the arguments and the question because it was based on knowledge and righteousness. Even though they were trying to destroy him with their words, Jesus didn't do that back to them. His care and concern was for getting the truth in their brain in a loving way. And I think these two proverbs point to that perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the complete opposite of slander and then the destruction we can cause, is speaking in a way that's gentle. And I think the proverbs we'll see coming up here, just the tongues of healing. Right. So it's just we're looking to be constructive and to have a positive impact with the things that we say rather than the complete opposite. So absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to move on to some wise uses of the tongue. The Proverbs mentions here. And again, in 15:23, to make an apt answer is a joy to a man and a word in season, how good it is. So, again, it's not just that we avoid these misuses of the tongue, the things we talked about, but there's so much good we can do by the things that we say. So we want to make sure we remember that as we talk through some of these things. The first one I have here is we're able to calm tense situations. Here in chapter 15, verse 1, it says a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So we're actually able to, diffuse, escalating situations by the things that we say and the way we say it. I was a claim adjuster for a few years, handling auto claims, and it was pretty often you would get people that would call in and they would be pretty upset about something, and usually as soon as you pick up the phone, they would start going in about something, and you could tell right away that where it was going. And they teach you in those situations, of course, that if you're able to maintain a gentle voice and a calm tone, that many times you're able to quickly de-escalate that situation and bring them down and calm them down by just your tone of voice. And, that was certainly true many times where if someone would call and they would be yelling immediately. If I was able to keep a calm voice and be, professional and speak gently, the situation would become much better pretty quickly. Not always. Nor did I always use that right tone. You guys probably know this from your experiences too, that, you can diffuse situations, quickly if you're able to speak, softly instead of trying to, take your volume to match their volume and take your intensity to match theirs. That's only going to make it worse, but we're actually able to calm those situations. It's really part of having a tranquil heart and being a peacemaker. Like we talked about a few lessons ago. So,
Jake, I think that's especially important in the home. dealing with children and dealing with our spouse. Each one of us is going to get upset, as you suggested, emotional sometime. But if the other one can keep a calm spirit, it as you say, de-escalates the situation, and that should be our purpose.
Absolutely, yeah, great principles, yeah, for the home as well, and because there's going to be, you know, obviously tense situations in our home life, but if everyone is doing their best to speak in the way we see here, then, you know, those tense situations can hopefully be diffused rather quickly. So, James Newman raised his hand. Yes, sir.
Yep. So, Sermon on the Mount, we're called to be peacemakers. So, yep. That's definitely one of the qualities that's needed to be a peacemaker.
Yeah, absolutely right. Blessed are the peacemakers. Yes, sir. All right, that's another wise use of the tongue. Certainly encouragement for the anxious or the depressed. In chapter 12, verse 25, he says, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down. We certainly know that is true. But a good word makes him glad. So there's encouragement. There's lifting up we can do for those, again, who may be a place of anxiety or depression, or they're down. You know, we maybe often wonder, like, what can we do? You know, we speak to people and we ask, well, is there something I can do? And maybe all we can do is offer them, you know, a word of encouragement or a text or an email or a Facebook message. You know, let's don't underestimate the value that can have on someone. And I know there's a lot of people here in this class tonight that are really good at that, at offering that encouragement to those who need it. So certainly there's encouragement that can be offered to those, again, who are anxious or depressed. As well as another wise use of the tongue is to rebuke someone in wrongdoing. As we've seen throughout our studies already, I'll put one example up here from chapter 9. Do not reprove a scoffer or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man and he will love you. So it's certainly a good use, if we're doing it the right way, to reprove someone, to offer wisdom to them, to correct them. It's really like the opposite of flattery, really, in a way, right? So flattery, we're saying all these nice things about someone, but we really mean it for their ultimate harm. Whereas here, you know, we're saying something that may be tough initially for them, but we really have their best interest at heart in the long run. So it's kind of like a direct contrast there, but certainly a wise use of the tongue. And something, you know, if you have to ask a wise person, what would they appreciate more? The rebuke that's going to build them up and correct them, or if you just say a lot of nice things to them all the time? Well, if they're wise, they're going to appreciate the rebuke more, so. And then lastly, for wise uses of the tongue, we see certainly teaching others. So here in chapter 13 and verse 14, it says, the teaching of the wise is a fountain of life, that one may turn away from the snares of death. So certainly, you know, passing on wisdom, you know, speaking that is obviously the way that that's done, through, you know, reproof and correction, as we've seen. Obviously, you know, throughout the beginning of this book, we had a father speaking to a son. So that's the way wisdom is passed down to our children and to the next generation. You know, we teach them those things through the things that we say. So this is going to lead me into what I want to, I guess, thinking about this idea of correcting or reproving others and teaching others, I guess you could say that there may be like an apparent contradiction, maybe on the surface of it, because we've talked about how the wise are people who are humble, who realize that they don't have all the answers. That's really part of what makes them wise, is they realize how much they don't know, and they're humble. And we see passages like this in chapter 12, verse 23 that say, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims folly. So it's like, yeah, the fool out here, he's just proclaiming everything that he thinks he knows, where the prudent or the wise are actually concealing the things they know. So they're not out there declaring everything that they know all the time. So we have that idea, but then we see passages like chapter 24, where it talks about wise man is full of strength, and a man of knowledge enhances his might. For by wise guidance you can wage your war, and an abundance of counselors there's victory. So, you know, it's talking about the value in offering counsel and offering guidance. So do we need to be people who are out there that are always giving guidance and counsel and reproof and rebuke? Or do we need to be people who are, you know, concealing our knowledge and keeping that in? Well, obviously the answer is it's, you know, it depends, right? It's not a funny passage, but it's interesting. I think it's in chapter 26 where there's actually back-to-back verses in chapter 26 that say, answer not a fool. And then the next verse says, answer a fool, right? So they seem to be contradictory, and they're right after one another. Well, what's the lesson there? Well, obviously, there's a time when an answer needs to be given, and there's a time when it's better not to speak. So there's a balance here that we have to navigate when thinking about, okay, is this the time when I need to be teaching or reproving someone, or is it a time when I need to just, you know, keep it to myself and conceal that knowledge? So to think through that, I want to put up some, I guess, principles of wise speech, I guess, to help us kind of think through this. And I think these principles also just help in a broad sense with everything we've talked about in the class as well. But I want to, I guess, think about it with this, again, contradiction. So the first is what was already brought up, you know, first is that we listen before we speak. We're quick to hear, slow to speak. You know, I mentioned earlier about how the wise are people who love the truth, and certainly above all, that means we don't tell lies and deceive people, but it also means we want to hear what the truth is before we assume things. So before we assume where someone's coming from, or, you know, what their intent is or what their motive is, you know, we want to listen and get that information first before we, you know, come back with an answer. And so we need to be people who are prone to listen first before we speak. Here in 18:13, it says, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and shame. So, and closely related to that, also people who think before speaking. So we listen, we also, you know, ponder the situation before speaking. Here in chapter 15, he says, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. So am I pausing to consider the situation, you know, the person, their situation? Is it the right time? What's the urgency? What's my motivation? Am I doing this out of, you know, selfish motivation, or is it for, you know, for their good? So we think before we speak. Not only that, but, you know, really important principle is it matters how we say it. As Blaine mentions here in chapter 15, it says, a gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. And then gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. So it matters, you know, our tone of voice and how we say things. And you may say, well, what does that have to do with deciding whether I should speak or not? Well, if we're not in a position where we can speak like this, where we can speak gently and in control, then it's probably not a good time for us to be speaking and to be, you know, reproving someone or teaching someone. It's probably not a good time for us to be doing that, you know, because the alternative is we're going to be speaking out of anger, we're going to be speaking out of impatience. We're not going to have that you know, soft answer that's able to turn away wrath, as we saw earlier. And so we need to remember that it matters how we say it. And then finally, it's our goal to be constructive and to actually have a positive impact on people when we speak. Here in 12:18, it says, "There is one whose rash words are like sword thrust, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." So is what I'm going to say, is it going to bring healing? Is it going to help? Is it going to have a positive impact for them? Not for myself, but is it going to help them? I think that's something we need to keep in mind as we think about this. I think, Christy, did you have your hand raised maybe a couple minutes ago? Sorry.
Jake, I would suggest on that first one, which is important, listen before speaking. You probably better listen to both sides before you speak.
Yeah.
Each person gives you his view of the thing and may be perfectly honest, but he sees his side of it. But there may very well be another side that you need to hear before you can make a decision.
That's true.
And speak what they want to hear. It's frustrating to the person who's presented his side of the thing and wants your approval, but still sometimes you have to exercise the self-discipline to say, well, I want to hear the other side of it before I pass judgment.
Absolutely, yeah. And if we really, again, or those who love truth or seek truth, and yeah, we're going to do whatever it takes to get to the bottom of that. Yeah, talking to whomever or listening to whomever we need to listen to. And I remember there is a proverb, and I can't remember where it is now, where it says something along those lines to what you just said, Sewell, where I think it's like the first witness speaks and it sounds good. Until the second witness speaks, and it's something else he said, right? So the first person speaks, and it sounds like the right thing until you move on to the next one and you hear something different. So there's value in hearing multiple sides of it, like you said, to really get to the bottom of what's going on. So,
Jake, what I was going to say earlier when you were talking about, you know, it depends, like how do you reconcile these two things is, you know, sometimes people might speak out of knowledge because they just are boastful. But another aspect might be is it's good to also conceal if it's going to be what's knowledgeable might be destructive to someone. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about, you know, all the facets of that information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, we need to, yeah, especially the second point here about thinking before speaking, we need to be people who, I guess that's a skill. It's a skill of wisdom and being able to do that and being able to see, you know, think about the situation and the circumstance and what may be the consequences if I say this or if I don't say that. You know, that needs to be something we develop towards, being able to ponder that, and that'll again help us to speak more wisely and speak more constructively and actually bring that healing and the things that the passages talk about.
Yeah, Jake, Proverbs 15:28, I think, speaks directly to that. I don't know if you covered that one or not. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, and the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. So there's a studying, and it may take more than just a split second, right? We often just say, hey, I need to think about that for a moment. Maybe we actually need to think about that for longer than a moment. Maybe we actually need to sleep on it. You know, I think we'd all do better if we had like a time delay between our brain and our mouth or our hands and the keyboard on the computer, right? We need to step back sometimes and not take a moment, but take minutes or hours or maybe even days to study our speech before we do it. Because the flip side is if you just pour what you've got in your cup out, the potential there is it's evil and it's the wrong thing.
That's right. Yeah, it's like that email setting, you know, where you can set your email to not go out until like 2 minutes after you hit send. If only we had that for our mouths, right? That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, Jake, and this really highlights the need for the entire body of Christ. I don't know if anybody can perfectly encompass, you know, all of the things that we're talking about here, all of these principles. I know I fall on the low end of I don't say enough, you know, to people, but I know also there's some people who say way too much, and it's kind of hard to find out, you know, where I fall on that, that scale and, you know, do the best I can. But, all of us together, I think, have a much greater strength than any one of us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. There's strengths and weaknesses throughout the principles we've talked about, and some are better at some things and some are others. And we can all kind of, I guess, help each other get better in the areas we're weaker in. This is a slide, I think it is from a class several years ago that Marty and Mason did. And I remembered it at the time, and I said, if I ever teach this, I'm going to take that and use it. This is a slide, and it's titled Proper Speech, the Test. And a lot of the things we've talked about, but it's almost like a test that you run through before you speak, and it's not something that maybe is feasible to do every time any word comes out of our mouth, but it's just helpful as a practice to think about, you know, these filters to go through to tell whether our speech is proper. It starts with, you know, are we speaking the truth, right? You know, are we speaking something that's deceiving, telling a lie? Obviously, you know, we don't need to do that. Do we know what we're talking about? Like, are we ignorant about what we're speaking about, you know, or do we have enough knowledge to actually speak the truth on something? And then, are we speaking after listening? After listening to all sides, if that be the case, like Sewell said, have I thought about the situation and the consequences and the results of what I'm going to say? Am I in control, right? So am I able to speak, gently, or am I just going to be speaking, you know, emotionally out of anger or impatience, or am I able to speak delicately and with an even temper? And is it the right time? Sometimes it's just not the right time for something to be said. It's just inappropriate given the situation or the circumstance. Is it the right urgency for whoever I'm speaking to? Right? Some things just are more urgent than others. It's just a fact. And so whether we say something or not, I think can depend on that urgency. And then, is it constructive? Like, does it bring healing? Does it give wisdom to help someone to avoid wrath or trouble? Again, so that's just kind of a visual there to think about. Probably not something that we could, again, feasibly run through every time we're about to say something. It may be if we have, you know, an important conversation coming up, maybe we can look at something like this. And if we have time to think about something before we talk to someone, we can run through this to see if we're able to speak in this way. But again, just our speech overall, I think it's helpful just to kind of maybe reflect and think about whether our speech overall is proper and wise according to what Proverbs says. So, all right, we'll stop there. That's what I have, but I'll open it up for any thoughts or comments.